From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up at yesterday's Coronavirus Task Force briefing, business leaders announced their commitment to produce much-needed medical supplies and equipment. But my Pillow CEO, Mike Lindell, not only talked about the mask his company is now producing, he urged Americans to address an even deeper need.
I encourage you to use this time at home to get back in the Word, read our Bibles, and spend time with our families.
Mike Lindell joins us in just a moment. And as we mentioned yesterday, based upon the recommendation of the Coronavirus Task Force, President Trump has extended the social distancing guidelines through the month of April. Are these guidelines making a measurable difference? Secretary of Health and Human Services Alex Azar, a key member of the task force, joins us later here on Washington Watch. And are we headed for a First Amendment showdown as some churches continue to meet and some elected officials like New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio threatens to permanently shut down non-complying churches? Will the Department of Justice rein in any rogue officials that threaten religious liberty? That's what I'll ask Eric Dreiben, who is Assistant Attorney General for the Civil Rights Division at the Department of Justice. And many churches around the nation are thinking outside the box, the four walls of the church, in terms of how they are doing ministry. Pastor Tim Holland of Life Church in Texas is here to explain Just Open the Trunk. We'll talk about that. And with three elections unable to decide a clear path forward in Israel, it now appears a power-sharing deal has been reached that will bring stability to the Israeli government. CBN Middle East Bureau Chief Chris Mitchell joins us live from Jerusalem with the details. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right. As a part of yesterday's White House coronavirus briefing, CEO of MyPillow, Mike Lindell, joined other CEOs in describing how they were using their companies to aid in the effort to get much-needed supplies and equipment to frontline healthcare workers. Now, MyPillow is making much-needed masks for healthcare professionals, but Mike Lindell also talked about a much deeper need that Americans have.
Now, I wrote something off the cuff, if I can read this. Okay. God gave us grace on November 8, 2016 to change the course we were on. God had been taken out of our schools and lives. A nation had turned its back on God. And I encourage you to use this time at home to get back in the Word, read our Bibles, and spend time with our families. Our president gave us so much hope where just a few short months ago, we had the best economy, the lowest unemployment, and wages going up. It was amazing. With our great president, vice president, and this administration, and all the great people in this country praying daily, we will get through this and get back to a place that's stronger and safer than ever.
Well, joining me now to talk about this is Mike Lindell, CEO of MyPillow. Mike, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me on. Well, I'll tell you, by me stating that, I've been attacked from yesterday. I just found out what Jim Acosta said about me. I mean, I'm really feeling it now, what I felt in 2016 when I went all in for the president. I got attacked then, too. It's like a rerun just because I spoke out for Jesus.
Well, I thought it was, first off, I want to thank you for taking that opportunity. The one thing I appreciate about this president, he allows people to speak. He doesn't shut them off. Now, you were there before I get into those comments. You were there as a part of a number of CEOs that are turning their companies into solutions for some of the challenges on the shortfall that are healthcare workers. So explain to our listeners what MyPillow is doing now to help meet that need.
Right. We turned over 75% of our production. I went into making the cotton mask, and I was so my passion is always to help whatever I can do and give back. And we did it in 3 days. Once I found out from the coalition from the that set up with Peter Navarro and all this, he directed me so I could find out what to make them out of and get the right, to make sure I was making the right things, the right sizes. At the same time, all my workers were getting the company ready so it's safe for our workers. And We did it in 3 days. We got up to 10,000 masks a day. By the end of the week, we'll be up to 50,000 masks. But we were hearing from all over the country then once we had announced it, and we were hearing everybody else that wants to help out. So I was, you know, then I get invited to the White House for these other CEOs, and we had a round table. And what an amazing thing that the president listens in and the vice president takes it all in and makes these great decisions based on listening, actually being listening to what's going on out there and who's participating. It was just amazing.
Well, now, Mike, you know, you and I know each other. And in fact, the last time we talked was at the White House, I think, may have been.
Yeah.
Well, no, actually, it was we were down in Florida with the kickoff of the evangelicals for Trump. But let me just ask you this question. I mean, in the press conference yesterday, you talked about what the company was doing. But then you turned to the president. I just played the clip and you said you had something off the cuff that you wanted to share. What prompted you to share that message?
Well, I thought the things we wrote were for the roundtable, and then I heard that we were, you know, it was going to be out at the press conference, and I just felt led by the Lord. I was sitting there, you know, here's the time the president, he was talking to the other CEOs by the Oval Office or in the Oval Office, and I just felt, you know, led by the Lord. So I jotted down some stuff on the back, and I just felt now is the time to give hope out to the people. What I had just seen in there, in that room, was all the things the president, decisions he was making and going, it gave me so much hope. And I wanted to get that message out there. And I thought, you know, God gave me the words, because I'll tell you, I couldn't read my writing. I couldn't read my writing. And I just wanted the people. I believe now is the time for the greatest revival in history. You know, I've had bad media call me today. And I said, I don't take back anything I said. I said, in fact, I'm going to double down. And, you know, God did give us grace on November 8, 2016, because a nation had turned its face away from God. And I think right now, people now they're coming to faith. Like, I believe they're, you know, and I'm gonna before I forget, I heard you talking about the churches. The president and I talked about that afterwards. Everybody had left, and we talked about the churches, and I said, Mr. President, I said, a good friend of mine, I said, I talked to Rabbi Kurt Landry, I said, he has House of David, and I said, they can't go open that, but yet a car parts store where they're not even using protection, and everybody's in there like nothing's going on. And I said, what's more important than the efficient or a business that is essential, I think, than a church where it's all praying. And then we also talked about the president saying, you know what, we need to get the ones that are open safe, like MyPillow. We made everything safe for our workers. Right now you can go into businesses, and I encourage your Walmarts of the world, they should have guards at the door saying, here, put sanitizer on, and you come with a mask on. And their workers should have masks. I mean, there's no reason that other businesses couldn't do that. What the president was talking to me about is get the ones that are out there should show an example that are open, and the churches should be able to be, if they'd be leading the way. Of course, they'd be making it, you know, making sure everybody was safe.
Mike, when you take this opportunity, you say the Lord led you to do this, but you also have a story in that the gospel, the Lord Jesus Christ, radically transformed your life, delivered you from drugs, and you have one of the most successful businesses in America. And I just, you know, this is a time, and I think you're right, that we need to share this information. People are looking. They're looking for answers in this time of uncertainty. And I'm just thrilled that these platforms are being opened, even though, as you said, the left media and the left attacks, they don't want to hear this, but it's true. And I do think the people want to hear it, and the people need to hear it.
Absolutely. And I view it as spiritual warfare. I knew that when I went all in 2016. I never knew anything about politics. Tony, you said it right. I came out of addiction. I had never voted in my life. I didn't know a liberal from a conservative. Take all that out of it. When I met Donald Trump in the summer of 2016, that was turned out to be a divine appointment. I felt led by God to go all in, and I risked my company and everything. I was attacked by the Better Business Bureau. They took me from an A-plus to an F. But I used Proverbs 3:5-6. trust in the Lord with all your heart and all, lean not on your own understanding, and always acknowledge him, and he shall guide your paths. God gives me favor, and he shows me all the time I'm on the right path. Today, we are just, I mean, I am so blessed that my platform was used by God to get the message out today, and I encourage every single evangelist, every single Christian, every single person in this country to get into the Word, get into the Bible, and this is the time for the great revival.
So, Mike, you told me earlier that your website was being attacked. How can people pray for you?
That, you guys, if you could pray that my website, it's like we've never had this happen. It's like it keeps breaking, things keep happening, and it's just, it's I just think it's the devil. I mean, it's evil attacking my pillow because it knows we're winning. We're winning. We're bringing God back to our country. And if you can pray for me to wisdom and discernment, what to say to all these outlets, and pray for my company to be able to, that's the foundation so I can do these things out there. And we're under attack.
All right. We will, we'll certainly do that, and also encourage people, if they need a new pillow, I can suggest a good source, My Pillow. How's that?
That would be great. Thank you.
Mike, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, God bless. Thank you.
All right, Mike Lindell with MyPillow. You know, I've been with Mike a number of times at different events, and he's just enthusiastic for the Lord, and not surprised at all at what he did yesterday and sharing that message. And it was a timely message, and it was a needed message, because we look at all of these things going on, and yes, we have needs, you know, for masks, ventilators. We have all of these things that are needed. But those are symptoms of a greater need. And right now, people are looking, they're answering the bigger questions of life. Are trying to. The uncertainty that envelops us. And yes, point people back to the scripture. If we turned off the television, opened the Bible, which is what Mike said. He said, look, just take some time and spend time in the Word of God and with your family. And I can't think of better advice. In fact, I've given the same advice out here. Turn the television off. You don't need to be watching the news 24/7. It's not going to change much. But get your family together and read through the Word of God. We've got the Bible reading plan that takes you through the Bible in 2 years. Great, great journey to make together as a family. You can go to TonyPerkins.com, find out more about that, or go to frc.org/Bible. And participate in that 2-year Bible reading plan. And as we have that confidence by spending time with God in His Word, then we can be a source of comfort and encouragement to others. And we're going to talk about that later, about how some churches are now thinking outside the box, the four walls of the church, and meeting the needs of their community in some really innovative ways. You know, we don't need to think about what we can't do. And I'm a little frustrated with some churches, you know, because they can't meet. They're trying to defy the orders. Instead of spending their energy trying to do what they're not supposed to do, why don't they spend their energy thinking about how they can minister elsewhere in different ways? When we come back, we're going to be joined by the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Alex Azar, with an update from the task force. That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. Is historic masculinity lost forever? Where can boys, young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of manhood, leadership, and strength in a culture of gender confusion? We need men to be men, tough with compassionate strength, bent toward justice without compromise, locking arms and standing. We need to be the men God created us to be and fight for all that is right, true, and just. This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join us at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference. To find out more, go to standcourageous.com. This conference is led by men who are seasoned, compassionate men who understand the issues of the day and will invest in you, helping you understand your role as a defender, a provider, an instructor, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, so that you can have the generational influence that God has designed you to have. Learn more at StandCourageous.com. That's StandCourageous.com.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood is the primary supplier of abortions in the U.S.? According to Planned Parenthood's most recent annual report, it committed over 345,000 abortions in fiscal year 2018. That means, on average, Planned Parenthood aborted 1,768 babies every single day in 2018. And while Planned Parenthood's report revealed an increase in abortions committed, many of the services they provide, such as breast exams and cancer screenings, have drastically decreased. FRC recently released its 2020 edition of The Real Planned Parenthood, Leading the Culture of Death. In this resource, you will find many facts revealing the truth, that Planned Parenthood is in the business of abortion, not healthcare. To access this resource and to find out more, go to frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts. That's frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts.
We can all benefit from a good lecture. They inform you and grow you. But sometimes you can't make it in person to every talk, seminar, or lecture you'd like to. Fortunately, Family Research Council now has a new podcast so you won't miss out. FRC's new weekly podcast called Lecture Me was created to help inform and equip listeners on the biggest issues affecting our culture today. Each episode presents a lecture selected from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast features today's top thinkers who address important issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Make sure to stay tuned after each lecture to hear FRC's thoughts on the content as they further discuss the topic at hand. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So good to have you with us. Normalcy will continue to be delayed as President Trump extends social distancing guidelines through the month of April. Now, this was based upon a recommendation made by the task force. Now, what information made the task force make this recommendation? And also on Sunday, the FDA issued an emergency use authorization for two anti-malarial drugs for use in combating the coronavirus. Joining me now to talk about this is a key member of the task force, United States Secretary of Health and Human Services, Secretary Alex Azar. Secretary, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's great to be with you and your listeners again. Thank you.
Well, I've been watching the task force briefings that have been taking place each day, and then Sunday, of course, the president making this new recommendation based upon what you and others have suggested to him. How did the modeling data that you had access to of the virus shape the decision to extend this social distancing, these guidelines through April?
Well, I think all of the different models that we're looking at, there's never one model that's perfect. It depends on the assumptions that the modeler puts into it. All of them suggest that we are not yet at the peak. And the president's 15 days to slow the spread is critical. It gave us those 15 days. But for us to actually see bending of the curve, because this has a two-week incubation period on it, for us to see real slowing of progression, we need to unfortunately continue those types of social distancing, community mitigation behaviors longer. You know, we're still seeing a very stressful situation in the New York metropolitan area. We're seeing in Chicago, Detroit, New Orleans, southern Florida, we're seeing cases and rising cases that are of concern, and now would just not be the right time to let our feet up off the brakes.
So, Mr. Secretary, in New York, what we see unfolding there, which seems to be the most dramatic, of course, the most densely populated area to be hit thus far, is this, are they kind of ahead of the rest of the nation? Are they a couple of weeks ahead?
Well, Tony, I think that's really going to be the dispositive question. Is New York and the New York metro area different from what we will experience elsewhere in the country. If we look at the epidemiological curves of every other community in the country that's experiencing cases, we see almost identical gentle sloping in terms of the increase of cases. New York is different. New York's quite different. Now, there are reasons, as you just mentioned, why New York might be different. They were a little later in getting to community mitigation efforts. It is a very densely populated, highly mobile community that spreads out over multiple counties and three states. So there are reasons why New York you might think would be different. The big test is going to be, do we see other New Yorks, or do other communities that get impacted look more like Seattle, where we're starting to see very real progress in flattening the progression of cases there?
Yeah, we've seen in my home state of Louisiana and New Orleans where, you know, that really mushroomed and spread out. Of course, that kind of linked back to Mardi Gras, another kind of almost international event where people come in very similar to New York in terms of the influx and then the exit of people going elsewhere.
That's right, Tony. And there clearly is a very dominant role of European travel having seeded into our country across communities. So as you say, Mardi Gras there, New York as a commercial hub. As Europe was experiencing cases, whether asymptomatic or symptomatic, and then individuals in Europe or from Europe were bringing that into different communities into the United States, that clearly is one of the major seedings in our country. And so big events like Mardi Gras certainly would have been amenable to that.
So, Secretary Azar, is one of the challenges that those that are working on this, the task force and others, is that this is so new. We just don't know what it's going to do, how it's going to mutate, how it's going to play out. So there's a lot. The reason these guidelines and different things are changing is because more information is becoming available every day as experts study this.
Tony, that's right. We're learning more each day. Our experts are looking at what's happening in Italy, what's happening in Germany and Spain, what happened in China. You know, I was just on with the Chinese health minister yesterday morning for an extensive discussion around what they've learned in the course of their dealing with the disease. I was just on, spent a lengthy discussion with the Canadian health minister today for her learnings on what they're doing and what we're doing. So we're really gathering information every day. You know, one of the things that we are learning is just the increasing prevalence, or maybe not increasing, but unknown until more recently, just how prevalent what we would call asymptomatic carrying of this disease is. We do have a fairly substantial percent of people who will have this disease and not present symptoms. Still fully to be determined how transmissible it is from those individuals, but that's why this can be something of a silent virus and very, very difficult for us to tackle, even with the traditional public health tools of testing, diagnosis, isolation, and contact tracing.
So it's extremely important that people follow the guidelines that's being put out by state, local, and federal officials.
It really is. And listen, I'm the health secretary, and I'll tell you, for me and my family, it's very difficult. So I just want your listeners to know the president, everybody appreciates that this is a moment, a call for shared sacrifice. People are changing the day-to-day routine of their lives, and workers in particular are hurting, although the president working with Congress has brought significant economic relief to people. But these are challenging times, but they matter a great deal because the actions that you're taking protect you, they protect your family members, they protect your community. And frankly, in a time of great uncertainty and anxiety just from feeling disempowered, the fact that by staying at home, by controlling your routine, by keeping distance, that you can make a difference in your own protection of your own life, I find that quite empowering in a time of uncertainty.
Well, we can all do our part, and that's one of them. Follow the guidelines, and that's loving your neighbor by not exposing them and not carrying the virus around. Secretary Azar, as always, great to talk to you. Thanks so much. Appreciate the work that you and the rest of the task force is doing to try to keep Americans safe.
Thank you so much, Tony. Great to be with you.
All right. Secretary Alex Azar with the Department of Health and Human Services. All right. Don't go away. We have much more Washington Watch to go. We're going to talk more about those like Mayor de Blasio who want to go beyond just telling churches not to meet now, but permanently shut them down. Will the Department of Justice take action? We talk about it next. Don't go away.
What are you reading this spring? At FRCblog.com, we have timely and original commentary on the issues facing our culture today. Our blog is written by our policy experts, the Family Research Council team, and outside contributors. On our blog, you can read about a wide variety of topics, including religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture. Some of our most recent blog posts include: To abandon the nuclear family ideal is to abandon being human. Why does the abortion industry hate women? China uses coronavirus to oppress religious minorities, and many more. At Family Research Council, our mission is to advance faith, family, and freedom in the culture by helping you to live out your faith and to stand for truth. With our blog, we hope to help you do that. Stay informed and get the resources you need at FRCblog.com. Again, that's FRCblog.com.
The Fairness for All Act was recently introduced to the House of Representatives after the passage of the Equality Act. In response, FRC has come out with a new publication, The Unfairness of the Fairness for All Act. This act attempts to find a compromise between the First Amendment protection of religious freedom and the demands of the LGBT community. Despite having the best intentions, it is an ill-advised and poorly drafted bill that does not achieve its goal. If this act is passed into law, it would allow the federal government to impose a belief system and ideology about sexual behavior and identity on all Americans. The Fairness for All Act would negatively impact religious freedom, true equality, and the privacy and safety of women. To access this resource and to learn more, go to frc.org/fairnessforall. That's frc.org/fairnessforall.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. So glad that you are with us. The website, tonyperkins.com. Talked about this yesterday, but it's worth mentioning again today in light of the fact that another pastor was issued a misdemeanor summons, actually in my hometown back in Louisiana. Pastor who has continued to meet after the governor had put in place a ban on meetings over 10 people. And this happened yesterday in Florida, Tampa, Florida. Another pastor, in that case, arrested. Last Friday, New York Mayor Bill de Blasio made what I think is a very dangerous threat when he threatened to permanently close down synagogues that did not comply with the orders not to meet. In fact, I don't want anybody to think I'm reading into this. I'm going to play a clip. This is from his news conference last Friday.
Everyone has been instructed that if they see worship services going on, they will go to the officials of that congregation. They'll inform them they need to stop the services and disperse. If that does not happen, they will take additional action up to the point of fines and potentially closing the building permanently.
Permanently. Joining me now to talk about this is Eric Dryban, Assistant Attorney General for the Civil Rights Division at the Department of Justice in Washington, D.C. Eric, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you for having me.
All right. Do those words concern you like they concern me permanently?
Yes. We have in this country freedom of religion, and while it is certainly the case that we are currently dealing with a crisis related to the COVID-19 or coronavirus pandemic and reasonable restrictions on the limitations of religious assemblies can be appropriate for health reasons, the notion of permanently closing a house of worship is quite troubling. This crisis will pass, and when it does, we can expect people will be free, as they always have been in our country, to gather together and practice their faith, including at houses of worship.
I mean, this is something that your department, your agency, would look at if a government at any level threatened to permanently restrict the exercise of religious freedom, is it not?
That's correct. So I head the Civil Rights Division at the United States Department of Justice. We enforce various federal laws that protect freedom of religion, and we accept complaints of any infringement of religious freedom, which anyone listening can just Google Place to Worship Initiative on the Department of Justice website, and you'll see instructions there about how to file a complaint. We take such complaints very seriously and would investigate and take appropriate action.
Now, many, Eric, at this time cite the First Amendment as an argument to continue to attend public events, you know, parties, go to, in my home state, crawfish boils, to church services. But in a time of emergency, in this case a national emergency, not just a state, this is the entire nation is affected by this, are there limits that can be placed on those First Amendment freedoms?
There are limits, yes, in the sense of limits to protect, in this case, the health of people in the United States, so long as those limits are applied uniformly to everyone, without regard, in this case, without regard to their religion. So, for example, general orders by governors or mayors, for example, to restrict gatherings or to limit gatherings can be lawful. However, if the government treats religious institutions, religious people differently, then that is where there could be a violation of the law. But as long as these restrictions are applied uniformly across the board to, say, movie theaters and restaurants, they can also be extended to houses of worship as well. And I know in my own case, my church is now operating remotely, so I log onto the Internet to watch religious services, where for my entire life up to recently I would go on Sunday to church itself. And that's something for the health and safety of the public that the government and the law does recognize.
And if someone says, wait a minute, I'm seeing where the law is not being applied uniformly, that it's only selectively being applied to some entities or organizations, that's where the U.S. Department of Justice would come in, is it not?
That's correct. Especially if it was being applied to disfavor the free exercise of religion. So in other words, if religion were being singled out and treated differently or worse than, say, gatherings at a restaurant or a movie theater or a nightclub or something, then that would be discrimination that would violate both the Free Exercise Clause of the First Amendment of the Constitution, as well as other protections that are codified in statutes enacted by Congress that we enforce at the Civil Rights Division.
Boy, that's refreshing to know that we have an administration that is aggressively watching out for those fundamental freedoms and ready to defend those if they are abridged in any form or fashion unconstitutionally. Eric, thanks so much for taking time out to join us. I'm sure there's going to be more as this health crisis unfolds, but appreciate what you and your colleagues are doing in Washington.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, Eric Dryban, he is Assistant Attorney General for the Civil Rights Division at the U.S. Department of Justice. You know, this administration, I've worked very closely with them, and I trust them explicitly on religious freedom. This president has defended it. He's aggressively pursued that really protection and even promotion of religious freedom. As we were talking about earlier in the program, Mike Lindell, yesterday at the press conference, the president didn't chastise him for sharing his faith. He said, I didn't know he was going to do it, but he's my friend. All right, don't go away. More Washington Watch to come right on the other side of this break. Where can young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of real manhood, leadership, and strength in today's culture of gender confusion? This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join us at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference led by men who are seasoned, compassionate men who understand the issues of the day and will help you understand your role as a defender provider, instructor, battle buddy, and chaplain, so that you can have the generational influence God has designed you to have. Learn more at StandCourageous.com.
Recently, a bill called the Fairness for All Act was introduced to the House of Representatives. In response, FRC has a new resource, the Unfairness of the Fairness for All Act. This act attempts to find a compromise between the First Amendment's protection of religious freedom and the demands of the LGBT community. But, unfortunately, it is a poorly drafted bill that would negatively impact religious freedom, true equality, and the privacy and safety of women. Learn more at frc.org/fairnessforall.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood is the primary supplier of abortions in the U.S.? According to Planned Parenthood's most recent annual report, it committed over 345,000 abortions in fiscal year 2018. That means, on average, Planned Parenthood aborted 1,768 babies every single day in 2018. And while Planned Parenthood's report revealed an increase in abortions committed, many of the services they provide, such as breast exams and cancer screenings, have drastically decreased. FRC recently released its 2020 edition of The Real Planned Parenthood, Leading the Culture of Death. In this resource, you will find many facts revealing the truth, that Planned Parenthood is in the business of abortion, not healthcare. To access this resource and to find out more, go to frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts. That's frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts.
We can all benefit from a good lecture. They inform you and grow you. But sometimes you can't make it in person to every talk, seminar, or lecture you'd like to. Fortunately, Family Research Council now has a new podcast so you won't miss out. FRC's new weekly podcast, called Lecture Me, was created to help inform and equip listeners on the biggest issues affecting our culture today. Each episode presents a lecture selected from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast features today's top thinkers who address important issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Make sure to stay tuned after each lecture to hear FRC's thoughts on the content as they further discuss the topic at hand. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at TPerkins. All right, after uncertainty in recent Israeli elections, in fact, three, with no decided victor, a new political breakthrough seems to be on the horizon. Benny Gantz of the Blue and White Party and the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu have reportedly agreed to a national unity government. What does all of that mean? Well, joining me now to break it down is CBN News Middle East Bureau Chief Chris Mitchell. Chris, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Great to be with you. Hey, you know, Tony, first of all, I just want to add, just echo what Mike said and you said. What great advice during this time to give people hope and to turn to the scriptures. And, you know, we talked a couple of weeks ago about the National Day of Prayer, that the proclamation that President Trump had. So on March 15th, we went down to the Western Wall and read that proclamation and prayed for people. And ever since then, we've been doing Facebook Lives on CBNNews.com and our website, our Facebook page, Jerusalem Dateline, reading the scriptures and praying for people, because we wanted to ask the question, where will people turn during this crisis? And, you know, they could turn to alcohol, they could turn to drugs. And like Mike said, like you said, we want people to turn to the word. So we read in scriptures like Psalm 91 or Matthew, you know, when Jesus said, come unto me. And so it's just it is an opportunity to turn people, to let people know that they can turn to God, they can turn to his word for such a time as this.
And I watched your live reading of the proclamation from the wall as you put that out on Facebook. I actually watched that, so I appreciate you doing that all the way from Israel there at the Western Wall. That was pretty neat to watch.
Yeah, it was quite an opportunity, and we put that proclamation, put it in the wall like many people do. They write their prayers out, and they put them in the cracks of the wall. So that's where it is till now.
Well, let's talk about prayers that are being answered, because at that time, you and I were actually communicating, and the horizon did not look so promising there in Israel after that last election. But things have now changed.
Quite a bit. And I would say that this must be an answer to a lot of Israelis' prayers about a government. As you said, over a year of political paralysis, three separate national elections with no one able to form a coalition government. So last Wednesday night, apparently there was a phone call between Benny Gantz, the leader of the Blue and White Party, and Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, and they look like they're on their way to forming a coalition government that was sort of announced on Thursday. However, so far there's no government yet because they're doing a lot of negotiating, and which happens typically on any coalition government, who among what party is going to get what cabinet seats. It's not like the U.S. system, so they really negotiate and horse trade to a certain extent. Who's going to get the defense ministry, the foreign ministry, the health ministry, the justice ministry? So there's still things to be worked out. There is a possibility they could be sworn in the coalition government by next Monday, or some people speculate it could be after Passover, which will be April 8th to the 15th, so maybe the middle of April. But it's very encouraging for people that have been hoping that there would be some sort of political stability here in Israel, particularly during the coronavirus pandemic. And that really is one of the motivating factors behind the political breakthrough, is the need for Israel to have an emergency unity government. And Benny Gantz, I think he was the one that really said, okay, let's put the political differences aside. He had been wooed by Netanyahu for weeks. Come join us. Come have a national emergency government. He finally said yes. He's paying a political price, but I think it's for the betterment of the country right now.
So as I understand this, Chris, a part of this would be kind of a power sharing where Benjamin Netanyahu would retain the position of prime minister for a period, and then they would switch and Benny Gantz would become prime minister. Is that right?
Exactly. 18 months till I think September of 2021, Netanyahu would remain prime minister, and then Benny Gantz would take over as prime minister. I think Netanyahu would become deputy prime minister. So that is the relationship so far. And also, and one thing that had been behind the scenes is a possible legislation that would disqualify Netanyahu from serving as prime minister because he does have three indictments right now. So that looks like that legislation will not be proposed, at least right now.
So, Chris Mitchell, what do we know about their personal relationship? You know, we saw a very combative election. They were, I mean, at each other pretty intensely. What's their relationship like personally?
Well, you had to wonder that after all these elections, and there was a lot of political infighting. It's a combat sport over here, it seems, in Israel. And yet they have worked together in the past. People may not know that Benny Gantz was the former IDF chief of staff. And so they worked together on Israel's security for probably the term of Gantz, which would have been 3, if not 4 years. So they do have a working relationship. They have a history together. So hopefully, because of this crisis, that both of them can work together for the good of Israel, particularly during this time.
It's going to be fascinating to watch, but certainly encouraging and inspiring if they can put that political differences, political past behind them, and come together and work for the betterment and the protection of Israel.
Exactly. And I think that was one of the big motivating factors for Benny Gantz. From a personal point of view and perhaps a patriotic point of view, from a political point of view, too, the polls were showing that his party, the Blue and White, that his support was eroding because they refused to join, an emergency unity government. You know, right over here, just like in many places in the U.S., most Israelis are staying home. There's a shut-in order for most people. You can't have a meeting of more than two people now, and you can't go from your home unless you go into the grocery store, or the hospital, or a doctor. So people are really hurting over here. The economy is hurting. So they want that stability. And so I think that hopefully they put their differences aside enough to form a coalition government and hopefully get Israel through this. Israel now has almost 5,000 cases. Tragically, 20 people have died. And they, like the U.S., is trying to get ahead of that curve and have these coronavirus cases start dropping instead of rising.
Chris Mitchell, one final question for you. With this, what appears to be now a coalition government coming together between Benny Gantz and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, this would preclude what many were concerned would happen with the Blue and White Party, that they might form a coalition government with some of the Arab members of the parliament that many hostile to the Jewish state.
Exactly. There were 15 members of what's called the joint list. These are the Arab parties. And as you said, many of these are directly opposed to the Jewish state. They openly have supported groups like Hamas and Hezbollah. So what the Blue and White Party had done for probably two or three weeks was actually try to form a coalition with these members of the Knesset that don't want the Jewish state to exist. And they were going to have a slim majority. And it would be called sort of a minority government where the Arab parties would support the government from the outside. And that right now is no longer on the table. And a lot of people think that's a relief only because this would have served as a platform for people who really don't want the Jewish state to exist.
I think that was an answer to prayer for a lot of folks praying here in the United States for the peace of Jerusalem and for the well-being of Israel.
Exactly. I think a lot of people feel the same way, Tony.
Chris Mitchell, as always, great to talk with you. Thanks so much for taking time to join us from Jerusalem.
Great to be with you, Tony.
All right. Have a great night. It's late over there in Israel. Chris Mitchell with CBN News. Find out more. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Well, as we were talking about churches, what are churches doing to address this current crisis? Many, you know, I've talked a few about some of those churches that are upset because they can't meet. And I get that. I understand that. You want to meet, but it's for public safety. It's for the well-being of your community. And so instead of thinking about what you can't do, think about what you can do. And we've been highlighting many of these stories of churches and what they're doing. In fact, if you have one, email me, stories@frc.org. One of those stories that came in was from Pastor Tim Holland of Life Church in Texas that I thought was pretty innovative. Just Open the Trunk is what they're calling the program. Joining me now to talk about it is Pastor Holland himself. Pastor Tim, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you so much, Tony. I appreciate your leadership at every time and every season, but especially in this very difficult time. I appreciate leaders like you that are stepping up and helping coordinate important initiatives that we need now more than ever.
Well, I appreciate that, but it all comes down to the local church. The local church is what's making the difference on the front lines. And in times like this, when people have a need, I've always said just find a need and meet it. And that's what Life Church is doing. Explain Just Open the Trunk.
So we knew when this crisis began, God was preparing our hearts to how we're going to serve our local church and also how we're going to serve our community. And I found myself, Tony, kind of in a quandary because I had two competing values at the same time. One was to make sure that I keep all of our staff, all of our volunteers and church families safe, of course, mm-hmm. And that we follow the direction of the president, of our governor, of our county and city officials and respect the policies that they've put into place. And yet I found myself with the other desire to want to reach people who are in need. I thought, how can we do both things? How can we achieve both things at the same time? It reminded me of the story of Nehemiah, you know, because Nehemiah knew that he had to defend attack of the enemy. And right now we have an invisible enemy, the virus itself. And yet we have to keep building the wall. We have to keep meeting the need. And so I had this idea of just open the trunk. So the way it works is really simple. Someone who wants to donate to our local church food bank, they can load up the stuff that they want to donate to the church. They just put it in their trunk and then drive up to the church. They don't actually park in one of our parking spaces. They just pull up in the front of our church right by the doors as close as they can. And they don't even have to get out of their car. In fact, we tell them to please not get out of their car for their safety and for our team's safety. And all they have to do is just open the trunk. And that's why we call it that, because that's literally all they have to do. When they open the trunk, one of our staff and volunteer members comes out and gets the box of the food that they're donating. We take it inside the church, and we sanitize it, clean it, organize it. And then the same process actually happens for someone who needs to receive food. They just go to our website and click on a form there that they let us know how the size of their family, and one of our team members calls them and gives them a specific time and a day that they can come and pick up their items as we prepare a box just specifically customized for them. You don't want to be giving diapers away to, you know, a single man who lives by himself with no kids in the house. And so we're customizing every one of these boxes just for what people need based on the size of their family. And they do the same thing. When they come to pick up, they just park in front of the church, open the trunk. They don't get out of their car. And one of our team members just places it there in the trunk of their car, so that they have exactly what they need, and there's no actual, interaction that would put anybody at risk, and yet we can meet the need in a time that is so difficult for so many already.
So that's what I call thinking outside the box, outside the four walls of the church, and how we can continue to do ministry. And I just encourage pastors, don't think about what you can't do. Think about what you can do. Find a need in your community and meet it. Now, Pastor Tim, I also, you shared something in your correspondence with us that I thought was very encouraging, and why it's so important just to follow the leading of the Lord, of the Holy Spirit. The Lord kind of led you in preparation of working through. You have a big church, and so you have like 16,000 people in the rolls, and you were going through that in advance, making contact with these people. So you kind of were already in process when this happened.
Yeah, it's really interesting, Tony. Last year, in about October, November, I felt a prompting in my spirit that we needed to actually pick up the phone. You know, we have social media, and we have website, and we have all the latest technology, but I really felt the need that we needed to actually pick up the phone and call one by one. And I'm sure many pastors can relate that throughout the years, you get a pretty big database of anybody who's ever visited the church. Some of those people are very connected and plugged in. Other people maybe have just visited once and maybe never came back. But I felt that we were supposed to call them, and we named it Operation Rescue. And so I had our staff begin to call people. Now, I'll be honest with you, a lot of people were very grateful for the call last year, and some were not. Some were kind of wondering, you know, what is it you need? Why are you bothering me? And so we had a mixed response last year when we did this. But we realize now that God had already prepared us so we would be organized, and now we're doing Operation Rescue 2.0, where we're going through the list of people. Our staff now is trained on how to make those phone calls, because one of the things, Tony, we had to do is repurpose our staff. There's a lot of pastors that have awesome staff members but don't know how to put them to use.
And that's a key part of this. Pastor Tim, we're out of time. We're going to follow this up later. But thanks so much for what you're doing, and thanks for joining us. Folks, we're out of time. Thank you for joining us. Until next time, stay strong in the Lord.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.